Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Q1 FY22 earnings conference call of Tejas Networks, hosted by ICICI Securities Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Bhupendra Tiwary from ICICI Securities Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Good evening, everyone. On behalf of ICICI Securities, we welcome you to Q1 FY22 results conference call of Tejas Networks Limited. From the management, we have Mr. Sanjay Nayak, who's CEO and Managing Director, Mr. Arnob Roy, who's COO and Whole-Time Director, Mr. Venkatesh Kattiah, CFO, and Dr. Kumar N. Sivarajan, who's Chief Technology Officer. We'll begin with the opening commentary by the management, post which we'll have the question and answer session. Without much ado, I'll hand over to the management. Over to you, Sanjay. Thank you.
Thank you, Bhupendra, and good evening, everybody. This is Sanjay Nayak, and thank you for joining the earnings call. We had uploaded our earnings presentation on our website. I hope you had a chance to download it or look at it, because we would be following the flow from that presentation. I'm on the first slide, which talks about the Q1 FY22 updates. On the financial side, our net revenues were 144.3 crores, which was a year-on-year increase of 86% corresponding to last year. Our PBT was 8.3 crores versus a loss of 9.8 crores last year. We actually had a fairly good bookings, and our order book has increased to 701 crores. The majority of the new orders actually came from India private as well as international. Our cash and cash equivalent decreased to 312 crores, and Venkatesh would explain in a short while on that side. In terms of the sales update, the India government business was slow, as I mentioned earlier, and even in terms of new bookings, so while we have won a whole bunch of tenders, those orders are not yet happened. On the execution side, because of the COVID restrictions in Q1 in large parts of India, some of those projects haven't executed as yet. We are also participating with our new product, which is the 4G base station for BSNL tender, and we are at the proof of concept stage, where we are being front-ended by multiple system integration partners who would be using our base stations and radio product for the entire solution. That trial has started and will be lasting for the next 4 months. On the India private side, we've seen a fairly strong revenue growth, 101% year-on-year. In addition, the order book was also fairly healthy in terms of the new orders that we got from the India private segment. A lot of this was really based on the new application wins that we won last fiscal year, both on the GPON product, which is fiber to the home, as well as the backbone capacity expansion based on the DWDM and OTN products, which are used in the metro networks for all the tier 1 operators. On the international side, we continue on the growth momentum that we had last year. Again, we had 82% year-on-year growth. On an overall basis, international was 52% of our total revenues, which is a good thing, because last year, on an annualized basis, international was 40% of total. We also got 6 new customer wins, 2 in Asia, 2 in Africa, and 2 in America. On the supply chain side, I'm sure a lot of you have been reading about the global shortage and constraints in the semiconductor industry. We got an early indication at the beginning of this calendar year, and we've been managing the challenges of this current situation by placing advanced component orders with all our critical suppliers who have long lead time and are making sure that we can secure our next quarter's requirement. Of course, this did require a little bit of committing additional cash, which is part of the reason for our working capital to be higher and the cash positions to be lower. Secondly, there have also been a little bit of price or cost increases by certain suppliers. Luckily for us, because the international business was more than half of our revenues, we were able to absorb most of those cost increases because of higher realizations internationally. As a result, our gross margins have almost been at our steady state level. That's kind of the quick summary of the health of the business. I would now request Venkatesh to go through the next few slides on finance, and then I'll come back and give a deeper commentary on the sales and the business on an overall basis.
Yeah. Thank you, Sanjay. Good evening, everyone. You're on the financial update slide. Before I begin on the, you know, commenting on this, I would like to inform you that Q1 of FY21 was an exception due to COVID-19, and a year-on-year comparison should be viewed accordingly. The net revenues for the quarter Q1 FY22 was 144.3 crores, which saw a year-on-year increase of 86.4%. In this quarter, we had just a break-even in terms of EBIT, so a 1.2 crores of EBIT for the quarter. On a PBT level, we had 8.3 crores of PBT, and on a PAT basis, we have 7.6 crore, and the EPS was, basic EPS was 81 paisa per share. Next slide. But on our key financial indicators, we had a net cash outflow of from our operating cash flow of 32 crores, and our net worth has been increased to 1,146 crore. Inventory was decreased to 201 crore by means of decreased on a quarter-on-quarter basis by 13 crores. While our focus is to consume the inventory on a quarter-on-quarter basis. However, due to the global semiconductor shortage, we are stocking up on long lead components to avoid any supply chain disruption. That is one of the reasons we had to make the payment to some of the vendors sometime in advance, or we have to make the payments on time to secure our inventory on time. Second thing, on a trade receivable has increased to 447 crores, which saw an increase of 33 crores on a last quarter. And two things, one is a delayed payments from our few customers due to the COVID lockdowns. And second one, the payments received from BSNL was continuously a challenging one. And it was coming in a slow pace. During the quarter, we had collected about 15 crores from BSNL, and we do expect to collect something more in the coming quarters. And on our working capital, the working capital was increased by 55 crores in this quarter, primarily due to higher payments to the component suppliers, coupled with the delayed collections from the few customers, which has resulted in the higher capital, higher working capital, and we do expect to normalize the working capital over the next few quarters. Of course, the combination of both the delayed payment and the higher payments to the vendor has resulted in the cash outflow, has resulted in 52 crores of decrease in the cash and cash equivalent. As of June 30th, our cash position was around 312 crores, and we are continued to be a debt-free company, and we have a strong balance sheet which can support of the future growth Now I will hand over to Sanjay.
Thank you, Venkatesh, for giving the financial update. I'm on the next slide in terms of revenues by segment. So the chart on the left-hand side is our analyzed revenues by the three categories that we track, which is India government, India private, and international. And on the chart on the right-hand side is the corresponding numbers for Q1 of this year. So as you can see, that India private contributed almost 52% of our total revenues. International contributed around 52% of the total revenues. India private contributed around 35%, and India government was 13% of total. So if you really see out of the whole scenario, the run rate business was really 87% of total in Q1. And on an annualized basis, if I were to look at the corresponding quarter last year, it's around 89.3% growth. The India government business was slow, as I mentioned earlier, because the project execution, although we have lots of orders, the project execution on the ground was definitely impacted by the COVID situation. In terms of the new orders that we got in Q1, a majority of them, around 95% of the new orders that we got in Q1, were from private and international, and only 5% came from the government. Although we won a whole bunch of government tenders where we are L1, those orders should come in terms of purchase orders to us during the current quarter. So overall, I could say that we had targeted to make our run rate business a lot more robust and a lot more predictable, and we are continuing to head in that direction. And the Indian government business will, of course, be lumpy in nature, and as and when the tenders come and we continue to get the orders, we should be able to execute that effectively as well. Going down a little bit further in terms of the situation in India, so let me start off with the government again on an overall basis. So on one thing which is a new product that we've been that we've not spoken earlier is the 4G wireless radio access network, which is commonly called base stations. So we have been investing in that technology for last many years, and that product is being positioned as a part of a fully Indian solution where all aspects of the solution, hardware, software, etc., from access to the core are Indian. For the BSNL's 4G tender and the proof of concept testing is underway. So two system integration partners have bid our products in that tender for more than, the total value of the tender is going to be fairly large. Second item, you would have read in the newspapers even today morning that government has approved additional budget of 19,000 plus crores for extending BharatNet to villages as a part of the BharatNet Phase 3 program under a public-private partnership program. The global bids for that have been, released. The global tender has been released today. We believe we should have a significant play as and when these things, come to a execution stage. And these would be executed by telecom operators or other service providers who would potentially be then executing this project and then, buying the equipment of the kind that we do. The third is that in addition to the wireless portion, which is the 4G network of BSNL, they also have to correspondingly upgrade their optical backbone and the access network, which is the wireline product that we have. And there would be fairly large value tenders also coming during the second half of this year to backfill the need for, building higher capacity networks for the wireless networks of BSNL. So all of that together, there's a fairly large set of business available from BSNL. Of course, all of that would be under the Make in India program and all of those things. Second bullet I want to talk about is all the initiatives with respect to Atmanirbhar Bharat and how they affect our company. So we have submitted the performance-linked incentive application, the PLI application for telecom and networking equipment category, as was required by end of June. They would be short-selecting the companies and announcing them sometime in the month of August. We do believe that our application meets the required requirements, and we would look forward to how that pans out in terms of approval. The second regulation, which has come into play from 15th of June, where Government of India has mandated that only secure telecom equipment can be deployed in any network, whether public or private or cable or ISP or any kind. And every company has to apply under the National Security Secretariat. We already applied for our products, and we believe that our products should be approved as secure telecom products, whereas products from certain countries probably will not be getting that green signal. On the critical infrastructure segment, this is a part of our business which is lots of tenders and it's almost a run rate business. So there's been, again, like in previous quarters, lots of tender wins in Q1, and we should be expecting orders from that. In addition, RailTel and Power Grid do have a few large tenders that are on the anvil, which should be tendered in Q2 or Q3. And again, since they are under the Make in India program, and these are our customers, we are long-standing customers for there for many, many different years, we believe that if you take the entire India government as a funnel, there's a lot of business opportunities which are available to us, which as the year progresses will cook. Some of it will be executed this financial year, and a lot of that, given where we are, could be for next financial year. In terms of the India private, this has been a sector that we've been very happy about in terms of the progress that we've been making over the last few quarters. So in the previous quarters, we've been announcing different application wins, whether fiber to the home for metro capacity expansion, and all of these with tier one operators as a part of their mainline network requirements. So we're very happy to say that some of that has started to flow in the form of business. So the metro capacity expansion projects have started to give us good order inflow as well as revenues in the first segment, and this is for both 4G expansion as well as for in preparation for 5G in future. The fiber to the home rollouts, which is another set of applications where we have been selected by all the major operators, that has still been slow in terms of our own revenues and our own integration into their systems. But we do expect that we are at the tail end of that process now, and starting from second half, we should start seeing increased order flow from the FTTX and the GPON applications from the two major operators that we have. There's another business that we have started in this quarter, that which I think I mentioned in an earlier earnings call, that a lot of the fiber to the home rollouts, the home broadband, is being given by smaller ISPs, and there are more than 100 such ISPs in the country. We can call them tier 2 or tier 3 ISPs, which are local operators. Some of them are cable operators who are morphing into internet service providers. But they also are now buying GPON equipment to give it to their customers. So we are attacking that market, which is about as big as the other two telcos. If you take the whole market in India, it would be divided between, you know, the two large telcos, you know, taking around 65%, and maybe around 30% of the market would be with the smaller guys. So we are targeting those as well using a channel approach. So rather than going to each and every one of them directly, we are appointing distribution channels, you know, system integrators who are, you know, local, state-wise and you know, region-wise specialist in these kind of things. And the first set of distributors have been signed. They have started to give us initial orders, and we do expect that this part will also become almost a run rate business going forward, and it can be a fairly good business for us. So overall, I would say that India private possibly could be one of the fastest growing segment among the three segments of our business during the year. Coming back to the next slide on the international, again, we have four regions that we are focusing on. Africa and Middle East region is the one which did extremely well last year, and it is continuing to do well this year. If the indication of new order flows and the revenues for quarter one is any indicator. And we continue to see a lot more repeat business from our existing tier one customers who are large operators for, you know, WDM products, which are 100 gig, 200 gig and so on, high capacity backbone networks. So we are doing extremely well there. And basically what's happening in Africa is that all the major carriers are upgrading their network capacities to address to the higher bandwidth demand from web scale companies, the big guys who are, you know, setting up large data centers in Africa, and also for the impending 5G rollouts. And clearly because of the geopolitical concerns, they are, you know, diversifying their customer base, and there's a requirement for many of them, especially if the end customer is a US company, to give them bandwidth on trusted equipment. So overall, I would say Africa continuing to do very well, and we expect this year will be a good year for Africa as well. South and Southeast Asia, again, this has been a territory that we have been operating for a while, and we had good success last year. We again feel that fixed wireless access, one large network we had won last year, and fiber to the home product for broadband rollout is again the application where we are doing well. And we continue to see good traction from this region, and you know, we expect again decent growth this year in this segment as well. Americas was a region that did not deliver us the results last year. However, we've been continued to focus. We've been investing into the region, and we have a direct sales force team working there. I'm happy to say that we're starting to see that region turning the corner. So we started to get some good orders initially. We've also seen some initial success, I would say, not large success yet, in terms of fiber to the home rollouts in rural carriers who are using the very large amount of U.S. government funding available for rural broadband rollouts. It's tens of billions of dollars of funding which is available, and we've started to get a little bit of success in that market. Mexico, again, was not performing last year, but this year we started to see good business momentum picking up. And overall, I expect that in terms of the revenue impact, America should see a decent revenue contribution during the second half of the year. Europe and CIS countries, we started late last year in terms of hiring some local salespeople both in Europe as well as in Russia. So they have started to do a good amount of branding and positioning of the company's products among multiple operators. So I would still say that we are in a business development mode, although we have responded to a lot of RFPs, and there are pretty decent sales engagements, primarily again for fiber to the home and DWDM products. So I would again expect that Europe and CIS meaningfully should start contributing in the second half of the year. So overall, if I were to look at the international, we had good growth in the last financial year, and if Q1 is an indication of the set of things, we expect to continue on a similar growth momentum during the current year as well. Of course, you know, with a larger revenue base, the numbers will get moderated to some extent, but at least from a growth and directional angle, we do see positive signs on the international side as well. The next slide is just a recap of the applications where we are winning, just to make sure that everything that I said comes into the right context. So on the access side, now we have two sets of products. One is the wireline products, which is the GPON and the, you know, the carrier Ethernet and those kind of products. In that same category, with the launch of our LTE base stations, which is a 4G product, which will in future be upgraded to 5G as well. We also now going a wireless broadband play in that segment of the business, and that basically opens up a relatively large market opportunity for us as well. The BSNL tender is one large such opportunity that we are working on, and we're going to be closely monitoring how that proof of concept and everything else goes. On the metro side, which is the capacity expansion on 100 gig, 200 gig, 400 gig, 600 gig, and this is pretty much state of the art in terms of the speeds compared to anybody else in the world. We are again very happy to say that this has been the growth driver in Q1, both within India as well as outside of India, in terms of private operators and large carriers who are now trusting our products in expanding their metros. And if you know, metro expansion is really the big area for a lot of the growth, especially when, you know, more bandwidth-hungry applications are coming, and with 5G coming in and driving a lot more bandwidth, the metro networks have to be very high capacity and robust, and we are well designed into that segment of the business, especially with the WDM as well as the OTN technology. And OTN technology, again, just for simplifying it for many of you, is the low latency technology, which means for 5G, you need low latency networks which have, you know, which do not have a lag in the network. And we really are, I would say, having a very, very strong portfolio on the OTN products, which is again winning in many, many tier one customers, both in India and outside. The last part is really the critical infrastructure, which is the switches, routers, as well as the transport and other elements that, you know, companies like rail, oil, you know, power, gas, smart cities, you know, surveillance, and all of those things need. And that again is another segment where we have been doing quite well. Of course, the last segment is more security sensitive. So there are many Make in India and security sensitive tenders where we do get a significant benefit as an Indian company. Overall, we continue to focus on R&D. If you see our investments on an absolute basis last year before, even this year, we continue to believe that that's only important for us to make sure that our products stay competitive, and we are relevant to our customers because of the best technology rather than, you know, just being there because of our incumbency. So we are generally, you know, continuing to get ahead in the game in many of the technology areas, not just for India, but for any other markets in the world. I'm coming now to the last slide, just summarizing, and then we'll open it up more for questions and answers. So really, in summary, I would say we are on track. So last year was a good growth year, but we must acknowledge that we are not yet there in terms of where our revenues were, say, 2 years back or 3 years back. And our first, you know, target is to reach in that direction. And I would say we are, you know, heading in the right direction with that, with solid financial performance in Q1. We had good revenue growth from run rate customers, which is the important aspect, because the previous cycle of our growth was built on a lot of government business, which is good business, which will of course take when it comes, but our foundation of the run rate customers now is rock solid, and we feel that that's a direction which you know, makes the company a little bit more predictable in terms of financial outcomes. The new order inflows continues to be good, so while we had good growth in terms of revenues, I think we have actually got a better growth in terms of order book as well as new customer wins. So we actually, you know, are optimistic about this year continue to be, you know, winning a lot more business from existing customers and, of course, from the new customers as well. Our focus on international business is yielding positive results. So if you see over the last 4, 5, 6 quarters, continually now we have built up a good base for international. In fact, this quarter, international was more than 52%, around 52% of total, which gives us a sense of geographical diversification so that we don't again get into a situation where over-dependence on India caused us, you know, a little bit of a turbulence in our numbers. And of course in India, which is going to be one of the most hotly contested and a large growth market for all the reasons I described earlier, we do see opportunities and clear opportunities to increase our market share. And sooner or later, our increased market share will start showing up in different reports, etc. And component challenges from a semiconductor industry has been a challenge for everybody. The only thing we have been able to do is monitor the situation closely, make early enough investments, secure components, even if it means paying a little bit more, but make sure that our supply chain continues to run smoothly. We have done okay job in Q1, I would say. It's not as good as we would have liked to, but I'm pretty sure that Q2, Q3, Q4, we should be able to do better than that. And as Venkatesh mentioned earlier, although our cash position did decrease to some extent, but we still have a very healthy balance sheet, and with the receivables and the other things that he said will get normalized in a couple of quarters, we should again be in a fairly healthy cash generating situation. So overall, I would say, Q1 has been a good start. We seem to be on track. And as the year progresses, we'll be happy to share more details about our progress with all of you. So at this point, I'll pause and maybe we can open it up for questions from all the listeners.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Anyone who would like to ask a question, please press star and one at this time. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Mukul Garg from Motilal Oswal Financial Services. Please go ahead.
Hey, thanks. Sanjay, I would probably start with the last comment which you made about doing an okay job in Q1 and expecting better in Q2 to Q4. So just a bit of a clarification around the Q1. Can you quantify the impact of lockdown and chip shortage on both revenues and margins? And the impact of advanced payments on working capital.
So I would say that internally we always have a baseline and a upside number that we would like to do. So of course we hit the baseline number. There definitely could have been so if you see the order book that we started the year was around 679 crores. So we had enough orders to execute both in Q1, Q2, and so on. So it was really a function of three things, actually. One was component supply chain disruption. And by the way, despite the best planning, any company in the world would always have some last-minute surprises, and so did we. So we could have done more revenues, but, that was one issue. The second issue, by the way, related was also the fact that some of the inventory that we had, some of the customers could not come to Bangalore for doing the final acceptance and testing because till around the 20th of June, there was a lockdown in Bangalore, and because of all the travel restrictions, there were certain amount of things that couldn't happen. So we wouldn't really exactly quantify how much more we could have done because we really don't, look at things on a quarter basis. So on an annualized basis, we believe that any turbulence from Q1 will get normalized as the year progresses. So in that sense, yes, we could have done a lot more, but it's really irrelevant at this stage because we are looking at the order book, which is starting with Q2. And I must mention, maybe just that might also clarify some of the things, that out of the 701 crore of order book that we have, around 50% of that we expect to revenue in the remaining three quarters of the year, which gives you a decent sense of things that we can ship if we have all the things in our hand today. So that's one point. Coming back to what's the impact on margins and working capital, I think, yes, there have been cost increases on certain components, not just for us, but for everybody in the world. There was a price to secure those components by paying a certain amount of fees, which we paid like anybody else in the world. But despite that, I think the fact that we've been able to hold on to our gross margins are almost around plus minus 100 basis points of what we usually do, gives us comfort that there will always be a little bit of a quarterly turbulence in terms of any particular customer India versus international or some tactical increase in component pricing. But on an overall blended basis, we feel comfortable that in Q1 and for the whole rest of the year, we should be able to hold our margins at the normal level that we have been able to do in the past.
Great. In terms of, again, coming to margins, this quarter, the impairment, the D&A was the highest portion of revenue after FY20 when you took an impairment. How should we see this going forward? Will it remain in the current quarter's run rate, or should it get back to what we saw in FY21? And finally, if you can just kind of clarify on the PLI side, what capital commitment would you be making given that they have this requirement of at least 100 crore investment?
So let me start with the last question first because there's a whole stack of questions. I remember the last one first. So the PLI requirement for the category that we are eligible for was a minimum of 100 crores. So all I can tell you that, of course, our application for more than 100 crores, and this is over a five-year period, because it's a confidential piece of document with the government, it's not appropriate to give the exact number. But since we are eligible under a certain category, the threshold of that was 100, and we, of course, crossed the 100. Coming back to the second question that you had about the gross profits, I think we are, as I said, we are almost at a steady state level. If you see on even last two, three-year basis or any quarterly basis, we are at about a plus minus 100 basis points of where we are. If you take it net of manpower and all the material costs, we are at around 40% gross profit. And I think we are around the same number this year. So I don't think materially anything has changed. So as we said in the past, the combination of international to India blend, particular kind of early customer versus late customer, and of course, the little bit of a near-term turbulence in terms of component pricing, we have been able to integrate it together without any material difference to our gross margins.
No, Sanjay, it was around depreciation. Maybe Venkatesh can highlight why it jumped up QoQ.
Depreciation, I don't think we had any. His point is there any unusual depreciation?
No. This time, the depreciation was on account of the normal capitalization, what we do in terms of our tangible assets and intangible assets with respect to the product development. There was no impairment. Anything has been done this time.
Yeah, there is no impairment at all.
Nothing. It's basically compared to last quarter, it went up by 2 crores with respect to depreciation and amortization cost.
Okay. Thank you. I'll get back into the queue.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ashwini Agarwal from Ashmore Investment Management. Please go ahead.
Hi, Sanjay. Congratulations. I think the numbers look quite respectable given all the challenges you faced on the lockdown and on execution of orders in India as well as overseas. So my question is that one is the receivables profile of government orders. So from your opening remarks, obviously, you have a very, very big play coming up in engaging the government both on the 4G side as well as various other programs relating to railway and so on and power grid and so on. So I just wanted to understand that does it worry you that if your revenue skew again goes back from current 17% government to whatever, 30%-40% government 1.5 years from now, your receivables will again go out of whack? Or is there any protection that you're seeing in the tenders you're participating in which protects you against delayed payments? I mean, how do you think about receivables challenge?
Certainly. No, thanks, Ashwini. So first of all, let me also clarify one thing that actually speaking, other than the BSNL one particular project, which is the BharatNet phase one, two, whatever we got stuck as payments from receivables from government, we've not had any challenges in terms of receivables being out of whack from a government point of view. So coming back to your answer, RailTel, Power Grid, all these guys are actually, we are long-standing customers, and we've never had any payment issues with any of them. So in that sense, I don't see any worry that our working capital or receivables will go up. Even on BSNL, by the way, except for this particular tranche of payments where we are stuck up with, we have done business with them 15 years before, probably 3,000-4,000 crores of cumulative revenues. And probably less than 1 or 2% of receivables we have not received from BSNL during that period of time. So you almost collect everything and almost on time. So I would say that BSNL particular is the only one which we have to worry about because of if they have a fairly large capital outlay, there has to be a backup available to them for them to be able to pay. The only thing I can mention, which I said in my commentary, is that we do have, for the very large projects, we have a few system integrators ahead of us who will be bidding our products. In that sense, technically, our customers will not be BSNL, our customers will be those system integrators. As far as Power Grid and Wilton and those guys are concerned, we absolutely have no issues in terms of collections. My sense is that and which is what Venkatesh mentioned, that in about 2 quarters from now, including BSNL, where we hope we should be able to make more progress with some of the new developments there, we think that our working capital should come to more of a normalized basis and the receivables will also come down. So in that sense, I'm not too concerned, because even if you see the BharatNet Phase 3 will be under the PPP program. So our customer, again, will not be government. It could be a telco. It could be a large, passive infrastructure company who's building that network, or a system integrator of repute whom we've been doing business with. So technically speaking, we would be insulated from a lot of that. So I would not worry about it. The other thing which I would want to make sure is that the way we are building the business this time around is to make sure that the government business should be upside. It can be, on top of what our baseline business is, which is the run rate business, and we would, of course, welcome it. But that should not become, the basis for all our, expenses and investments. So that is definitely something we'll continue to monitor very closely.
So thank you so much. Thanks. That's really helpful. The other question I had was that, when you look at your order book, you mentioned that 50% of this order book you expect to execute over the next 3 quarters. And, you roughly received 200 crores worth of new orders, give or take, in Q1. In many other businesses, and pardon my ignorance on this, many other businesses we see that, people like yourselves, they're able to build order books which provide visibility over 6 or 8 quarters or even 12 quarters. I mean, is that something that is reasonable to aspire for, or in your business that doesn't really happen and it's pretty much cook and eat all the time?
Yeah, so actually speaking, it's a good point you raised, and maybe this is a good time to kind of give you clarity on that. So the way our business is, the most repeatable business that we get, which is the recurring business we get from existing customers, which you call run rate customers, typically the order book only stays for at most 1 quarter, or it's on the quarter boundary, really. Say the order came late in the quarter, we would not ship it that quarter, and it will literally go out. So, for example, international customers, we revenue whatever is the backlog in hand, maybe 90% of that in the next few quarters. India private, probably we do, 80% of that in the next, 1 or 2 quarters. It's only the government business, which is the project kind of business, which gives you all the backlog. So actually speaking, in a sense, the only thing which is, 6-8 quarters worth of stuff is the government business for us, because that's the only thing, and this is of the project kind where you have to do some system integration, digging, laying of fiber, or then, putting electronics and running the end-to-end network. Those are the kind of things which give you, a large backlog. But in a sense, I would say I would be happier to have a backlog that gets consumed on a recurring basis, because the stickiness of those customers, the longevity of those customers is much higher than these one-off tenders, which will give you a large backlog which you see for 6-8 quarters. So in that sense, it doesn't bother us at all of not having a large backlog in that sense. So really a big chunk of a backlog which continues to stay for 6-8 quarters is really only the government business. Everything else really literally gets consumed. We work on forecasts, by the way, from many of our private customers and international customers, where they could potentially give us an order in the first week of the quarter, and the order is actually executed by the end of the quarter. So there will be no backlog to begin with and no backlog to end with. And those are actually the best customers that we have. So the nature of our business is that just having a very large backlog doesn't necessarily mean much. Whereas rate contracts with run rate customers, where we are getting recurring revenues means a lot more. So I think that is the reason when I was highlighting in my commentary earlier that 87 or 88% of our revenues basically come from run rate or existing customers. That's actually a sign of a healthier business for us.
No, no. Thank you. Thank you so much for that clarification. It's very helpful. And last, for Venkatesh probably, how much is the amount which is still outstanding with BSNL?
Yeah. Currently, during this quarter, we had collected about 15 crores from the BSNL. After that, the outstanding amount was 120 crores, of which, about 70 crores is a retention.
Okay. So what you need to receive over and above is just about 50 crores.
About 50 crores, yeah. Which is already due, we should have collected. Yes.
Oh,
and
okay.
We do have
so
a
thank you
to
so
collect
much.
This, the outstanding in one or two quarters or so.
Okay, okay. Great. No, this is great. Thank you so much. All the best, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Prateek Kedia from Kedia Securities Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question. In regards to our association with TCS, it looks like a path-breaking opportunity for the company of our size. But just want to know, what is the opportunity size? How big is this opportunity? And how would this convert into revenues? And also, if we are, also seeing more associations and alliances with other companies, like Tech Mahindra or these kind of companies, please.
So good question. So as I mentioned, the BSNL 4G tender that for which we have filled out an expression of interest, and as you said, it's publicly disclosed by BSNL that the couple of system integrator partners who have been taking our technology and bidding, one of them is TCS and the other is ITI. So these are the two people who have taken Tejas wireless technology and have put in the expression of interest for which the proof of concept process has started. So yes, our objective again was that for very large projects, we would prefer to work with the system integrator like we did in the case of some of the army projects or even some of the state BharatNet projects. Coming back to the size of the opportunity, a pan-India network for BSNL for which they plan to do this tender is going to be a very large opportunity. They have, I think this expression of interest is for, 57,000 base station sites, which could mean, 8,000-10,000 crores worth of order to the system integrator. Of course, if he, L1 would be maybe some fraction of that because it will be split between multiple parties. So I think it's a fairly large opportunity, but the way we see things is that it's a step-by-step approach. We had to have a product which is world-class, which meets the specification, then we have to go through the trial process, which has started. The only thing we feel proud about it is ours is a 100% indigenous Indian solution with all the technology available within the country. On a longer-term basis, that, gives more comfort to the government. And, of course, as the process progresses, we would get a better visibility of how the whole thing will pan out. But at this stage, we are really taking it one step at a time. And, yes, it is a large-ish opportunity, but we have to play it as it comes.
Right, right. And just one thing more. In regards, we are already working with Jio as well. Are we also exploring business with some cable and broadband companies like Hathaway or GTPL Hathaway or Den or other companies? Do we see an opportunity here as well?
Absolutely. So, in fact, one of the things which I mentioned earlier is for the fiber to the home, like the larger telcos definitely have their own plans. But then there are all the smaller ISPs, not just the ones that you mentioned, but in, let's say a small city in, Madhya Pradesh will have a local ISP or a local cable operator who serves, 10, 20,000 customers, and there are many, many such people. So we are, and by the way, when you add all of those up together, they actually end up becoming a fairly large consumer of FTTX products and some of the switches that we have. So that is one area which we never looked at seriously in the past. And starting, as I mentioned in my commentary, in the last quarter, we started to appoint some distributors and we started to get some initial orders. So that's an interesting business which is opening up. Of course, it's a slightly different method of selling than we have been used to because we are used to selling to few customers with a very high degree of technology. Here we are going to go through a channel sales if you were to think of. But, it is looking like an interesting opportunity and we will continue to invest. We have hired a focus team to do that. And in the Q1, they have made pretty decent progress for us to have a view that this looks like an interesting business to pursue. So, yes, we are going after not just the names that you mentioned, but even a lot more smaller operators spread across the country, but in an indirect way through the channel stock program that we talked about.
Right, right. Thanks again. Thank you. Thank you. That's a lot from my side.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sanket Bihani from Kedia Securities Private Limited. Please go ahead.
So I just wanted to ask with regards to the Satcom gears, do we see any opportunity for our products? Like OneWeb is investing in a big way in India. So do our products fit in those category? And
No, we do not address that space. So our space is traditionally our space has been on wireline, which is wherever optical fiber goes. Our products go in terms of, you know, high-speed backbones or, you know, now home broadband. In addition, now we have launched the wireless product, which is more like the base station that, you know, that you receive your cell phone signals from. We have not yet gone to the satellite. It's a different technology, slightly different market segment. So our focus has been mostly on the wireline and wireless, and satellite is not a segment that we address.
So are we looking forward to do any R&D on these kind of products and try to address this market, or it is completely out of our focus area?
I think we, if you see, our hands are already quite full in terms of technology with the product that we have and the focus areas we have. I, of course, did not put it into these slides because we have discussed this in the previous, you know, earnings calls. I mean, just the wireline product that we do today, which we have products today, which we can address, is almost like, you know, $9-10 billion worth of opportunity. On top of that, now you start opening up the wireless opportunity. You know, that adds up a significantly large number. So I think the addressable market with the product that we have is already huge, not just in India, but outside of India. So our first challenge is with the product where we have, where we already have done huge amount of R&D over the last 5, 10, 15 years, we want to maximize our sales impact and really become a much bigger player in terms of market share in those segments. Once we have come to a situation where we feel that, you know, we have more growth opportunities, then we would think of investing into new areas, because anytime you invest in new areas, it will be 2 or 3 years of R&D lead time before you can get your products in a competitive enough form to compete with the best in the world. And then you have to start building business. So I would say we have, with the product portfolio we have quite, it's a very large TAM. Our objective is to play in those spaces, make ourselves more competitive, and also sell a lot more of them, not just in India, but outside.
So, got it. Thank you. That's it from me.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sangam Iyer from Consilium Investment Management. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Sanjay ji. Congratulations on a good set of numbers. Am I audible?
Yeah, thank you, Sangam.
Yeah. Sir, I just wanted to understand, you know, given that, you know, you made two comments initially. One was the fact that the incremental quarters would be better than what we have executed in Q1. Now, given the challenges that we have seen in Q1 with regards to lockdown, what is the situation with regards to the inventory going forward that gives us the comfort for the coming quarters? My background being, you know, when we look at the countries in Southeast Asia from where the components do come in, there is lockdown that's imposed in certain areas. So is there an issue that's there that you can foresee in the near term? Or do you think that given the inventory that we would have currently, it's sufficient for the next couple of quarters or so without much of a problem? How would you address the situation there?
Yeah, the good question, Sangram. So the reason for our optimism in terms of the subsequent quarters being better stems from two fundamental, assumptions. Number one, the order book and executable POs for which customers are actually demanding a lot more equipment from us sooner is pretty decent. I mean, if you look at, you know, the order book at hand and the run rate orders which are coming in, so that seems like a base covered, which means we have enough business that we will get. Then the second part comes back to what you said, which is that do we have enough components and what's happening in Southeast Asia, and there have been some lockdowns. So primarily the shortage of components in the world is semiconductors. And that primarily, you know, TSMC in Taiwan is one of the foundries, Samsung in Korea and a couple others. So I think from the way we see things is that our component suppliers are all, almost all of them are US sourced companies who have been having long-term contracts with all of these guys. What happened, and the reason for a little bit of a hiccup was that in January, February, suddenly because of the, you know, the component problem got amplified in the world, component suppliers immediately shifted from a lead time of, say, 12 to 16 weeks to 40 to 52 weeks, okay? So that first transition happened in the month of January, February, around that time. So even though we took corrective actions immediately then, you know, with that in mind, of course, you know, all the pull-ins or all the, you know, distortions in supply chain are not easy to cover within a four-month period, as you can understand. But as the year progresses, we have been able to now, you know, secure those components, and we have, you know, delivery plans from those suppliers. We have reached out actually to the global top management of most of our key chip suppliers, and we seem to get a disproportionate attention compared to our size because we are the leading company in India. So if any chip vendor long-term wants to play in India, we are their best vehicle. So as a result, we have been able to secure what is being commonly called as allocation from their existing stock based on, you know, our stature in the Indian industry and the kind of customer profile and the growth profile that the company has. So combination of all of those things based on the plans that we are seeing from our suppliers, we have a reasonable amount of comfort that, you know, upcoming quarters will be good. The only downside is that, you know, there can always be in a situation where, say, 15 days of last 15 days of any particular quarter, suddenly there's a lockdown or airlines are not lifting material. I mean, that's something which is, you know, hard to, of course, anticipate. We will, of course, not leave everything for the last, but I would say barring those kind of situations, we are trying our best to manage the supply chain fluctuations, but this is a continual and ongoing process. If you talk to my supply chain head, he will always say that, oh, you know, every day is a new challenge, but so far we've been able to manage and placed enough orders, enough in time, and, you know, the lead times and the dates we are getting from our suppliers seem to be reasonable in terms of what we want to achieve.
Great. That's wonderful. Secondly, on the order book, how much of an impact has this, you know, lockdown or the delays been in terms of the conversion of the funnel into order book? Because after two, three quarters of, you know, strong 190, 200 crores of orders that we had, you know, at least two quarters of 200 plus, and even Q1 last year was 190 odd crores, we are at 166. But it's good per se, but when I look at the track, you know, run rate that we had achieved of 200 as a benchmark, was there any...
So maybe I can just answer Sangam's question for others' purposes. So actually, if I count the orders which came in the first week of this month, we've already again crossed 200 crores order book. So in that sense, I don't see any slowdown in terms of the new order inflow, except that sometimes things don't happen exactly at the end of the quarter. So I would, at a macro level, feel that the order inflow continues to be in line with what we have seen in the past. And, you know, the only impact of which I mentioned earlier is that the tender wins, the government orders, of course, because almost for two and a half months of last quarter, most of the government offices in India were closed or working with very low capacity. So those order conversions got affected. But, you know, if I were to kind of again say just slip outs by a week or so, I mean, we are in the same order run rate that we have been in the previous few quarters. So I won't see any cause of concern there.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Abhishek Basumalik from Intelsense Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions. First one is, can you please talk a little bit on the UI opportunity? I mean, we understand that UI had about 36% market share compared to around 15% that you had. And how would that change now, if it is going to change, and what are you expecting in the near future?
Let me just understand. Ethan, who has 56% market share?
36%. Huawei used to have
36%. Okay. So your question is that Huawei, the Chinese companies, had a certain market share in India. And going forward, given the new government regulations, what would be the impact of their market share going away on potentially our market share. Is that your question?
Yeah, I mean, how would it help us?
Absolutely. Okay, good question. So in fact, as you would have heard, I mentioned in the context of Atmanirbhar Bharat, one of the new rules which has come into play with effect from 15th of June, which is just a few weeks back, is that any equipment that any operator deploys in India has to be from a trusted source and from a country that India has green signaled. So many of those vendors from certain countries may not get their certification for trusted sources. And operators will be any augmentation of capacities of that kind of that market share will go to someone else. That is partly the reason when we mentioned earlier when I gave the commentary that we expect our market share in India to improve was partly because someone is going to fill up the hole that will be created. Some of it could be us, some of it could be incumbent vendors from US or Europe, but that's something which is likely to happen. We definitely feel that we do have a good shot at improving our market share. How much we improve, how fast we improve, is all going to be something that we'll have to see as quarters progress. Because even though, market shares are determined on a broad basis, but it really gets determined on every customer, every application. So unless you won that application, unless the customer has tested your product, there's a lead time, there's a delay between how long, you get selected and when the orders start flowing in. So we have gone through that process for certain things last year, and that's starting to show up in results this year. I mentioned some other things we'll start to see more impact in second half. But it looks like a good opportunity for us, and we will closely monitor it.
Okay, thank you. And my second question is maybe slightly long, but you've won orders for FTTH and backbone capacity expansion. What is the roughly revenue potential for this? And will any of these revenues come in this quarter?
So yes, so the revenues are already coming in. So for the metro capacity expansion, the part of the uptick on India private is partly because of those orders of metro capacity expansion that we won last year. And it will not be a one-time thing. It will be like a sustained basis quarter on quarter for next several years, we hope. So that's the way the metro capacity expansion would work. As far as the FTTX opportunity is concerned, the home broadband opportunity or enterprise broadband opportunity, while we have been selected by two operators, the actual orders in terms of, it's a long process of getting integrated in their networks and testing, etc. That process is almost to the tail end of the process. So we expect that the revenue impact of those things would only happen in the second half of the year. So in that sense, we've got some benefit of the wins of last year in the numbers and the booking and this thing so far, and we hope to get more of it in the second half of the year. Coming back to your question about how large the opportunity is very large. I think if you see the FTTX penetration in India, and if you look at the numbers that every operator has been projecting, I think anywhere between 5 to 10 million subscribers is what per year is what is aspiration of at least the top two operators in the country, and that translates to a multi-hundred crore opportunity for us on for the product that we are designed in every year. So I think, but to get to that rate and all that, as I said, we'll start from second half, and it will be a ramp up and we'll see how the ramp up actually happens. But it's a fairly large opportunity, and similarly, metro capacity expansion is again a fairly large opportunity. India buys a few hundred million dollars worth of optical equipment for that application, and of course now we are entering into a market share game in that, and as time goes by we should see some uptick there as well. But these are both large opportunities, but since we are just nascently starting to get market share, that will take some time, but We are seeing good traction. Our products are getting good acceptance with the customers. They are working well, and hence the order inflow is accelerating.
So do you see this business doubling over, say, the next two to 3 years? The broadband
side? The opportunity exists. Definitely the opportunity exists.
And just if I may squeeze in one more question. In December 2020, I think you had announced a $13 million order from Southeast Asia. for UCB TJ1400 product.
Mm-hmm.
That was supposed to be executed in 12 months. So just wanted to understand where we are with that, if you, you know, booked any revenues from it and how things are going on that front.
No, very, very good question. And we did the revenue part of that in Q4. We have revenued part of that in Q1. A significant part of the material has already been dispatched. There's a whole bunch of services around to turn up the network. So it was a combination of the UCB product is a combination of wireline and wireless. So whatever we are going to, for example, the trial and testing that we're going to be doing in BSNL, same equipment was shipped there as well. It's turned up, it's live, it's carrying, you know, huge amount of data and traffic. I think a significant number of sites have already been turned up, and I think over the next one or two quarters, the remaining network will be turned up as well. So I think we have, that network's progressing well. We actually expect to get repeat orders from that customer in the second half of the year, and that's something which I can say about that project.
Okay, thanks. I'll join back in the queue. I have a few more questions. Thank you.
Sure, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ashwini Agarwal from Ashmore Investment Management. Please go ahead.
Hi, Sanjay. Thank you again for the opportunity. So I just wanted to focus a little bit on the long-term aspirations in the European and US markets for yourself. The sense I have, and I could be wrong, is that in Africa, at least you're dealing with all the large network operators, and in India, you're dealing with the two big ones, who are very well-known entities globally. So is that helping you kind of start conversations with the big telecom carriers in the US and Europe? And in your opinion, how long is this sales cycle? Or is this business something which is too esoteric and, you know, very difficult to break into?
So a good question, first of all. So let me break the problem into two. Do we have the right products for addressing the tier one operators in those countries? And the second part is, do we have the right sales, market access, or their way of doing things to be able to crack those accounts, and how long those take? The real problem is that those operators have very strong incumbent suppliers. Just to give you a sense, if you take a tier one operator in the US, you know, any of our competitors who do business with them, and they do about $500 million of revenues from one of them alone, okay, for example, for our kind of products, right? They would have like 300-400 salespeople, support people, just supporting that account. They would have probably a couple of hundred people in R&D just doing those little bits and pieces and every last level of detail that those guys need. So I think rather than, and given where we are in the size of our company and growth aspirations, etc., we felt that it is not a good time for us to go and address those guys because of the, and by the way, that even from the day zero of engagement that you start with any of those large tier ones, it could be anywhere between 12 to 18 months or 24 months before you get the first dollar. And you would be required to probably spend $5-10 million just to even get into their labs, do the trials and all that. So we have started to engage with some of them in a smaller way. But what we feel is a more practical strategy for us is that, like in India, I was telling that there's this small ISP market and which is large market. In the US, if you even take the top three, four guys, the remaining guys, tier twos and tier threes in the US, is a very large market opportunity. And that does not require 12 to 18 months of time. That does not require us to have 400 people R&D and sales team to manage that. So we are going after that market. We have fairly sweet spot product for that market. We're starting to see initial success, except US is a very large country with maybe 500 such tier 2, tier 3 operators. So even if you put a sales team of five, you know, sales, five pre-sales and, you know, five support people, you can only cover so many of those. So one has to pick and choose the battles. So we are taking a little bit of a more conservative approach in these two countries to say, let's go pick the low-hanging fruits first, get a brand name done, get a, you know, what should I say, foot on the ground done. And then as we get more size in that market, we will have more resources. We'll pick and choose the right opportunities to engage with these large guys. But once you get in, of course, you know, things will look good. We are heading in that direction. And as I said, it's a conscious strategy to play into, you know, the sweet spots of what we have and not get into a trap of, you know, very long investments and very heavy investment cycles for many years.
And is this similar to what you do in Africa in the sense, though not deal with the tier one suppliers, but with smaller networks? But I'm not aware if there are.
Whereas in other countries like Africa and all, we are in the tier ones. Africa,
okay.
We are in tier ones. Asia, we are in tier ones. So other markets, we are actually incumbents in some of the very large guys. And we are the guys who are displacing everybody. We are playing a market share game in those markets where, you know, they know us. In fact, it's becoming a reference game. Some of the most prestigious customers who are, you know, pumping bandwidth into Africa, the best-known, you know, brands that you know of in the world, many times lots and lots of our equipment is going into their data centers or their sites. And they are asking, "Hey, who's this company?" And then many, and because of the credibility that we are earning and the kind of network performance we are getting, we are getting reference deals that some other competitive operator of those guys comes to us and say, "Hey, looks like these guys are doing a good job, and why don't you know, put that equipment?" So I think Africa and all those places, we already crossed that hurdle. U.S. and Europe, just because where we started the investment and where we are in the maturity cycle, it will be some time before we get into very large deals. Having said that, there's enough other business to be picked up, which we are essentially targeting to make some meaningful contributions starting from the second half of this year.
Okay. And just a question on pricing and margins. When you talk about the small ISP providers in tier two, tier three cities in India, or you speak about the small, last-mile broadband service providers in rural America, on a profitability basis, because these would be harder to access and probably costlier to access, next to you, are you able to protect your margins for this business?
Absolutely. In fact, exactly for the reason that you said, because these are larger, smaller operators and the big guys don't give them enough attention, the gross margins are much higher than what you would get from a tier one operator who will squeeze the hell out of you for everything, right? So the gross margins are not much. Even the sales cost, but these are two very different problems. The one which you mentioned in India is very different than the one you mentioned in America. In the American market, we go through distributors and we go to some of the larger rurals and larger state carriers. There we don't have any margin issues. Net of sales cost, I think we are fine. In India, since you mentioned the tier two, tier three small operators are small operators, I don't see, the price they get for the same equipment is much higher than what a tier one operator would do, because tier one operator is buying, large volumes of equipment and they have a lot more bargaining power. Whereas a small ISP in a small city in India doesn't really have that. And in fact, for the small guys in India, we actually collect money in advance. It's more like a cash and carry business. You know, we sell it to the distributor, he pays us cash, DD, and then we give him an X amount of equipment. In America, it's 30 days net. So I think cash flows are better, margins are better. Since there are lots of those little guys, you can actually establish a pretty decent run rate. So that's basically what we're targeting.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. All the best.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sangam Iyer from Consilium Investment Management. Please go ahead.
Yeah, Sanjay, thank you for that. My call got dropped off earlier. Just to understand, given the kind of, bullish sentiment in terms of both, order bookings and, pre-qualifications done, et cetera, how soon do you think that we can go back to the 200 crore per quarter run rate?
Well, we want it soonest, like you said. So now we are heading in the right direction, and I feel that, we really don't focus quarter on quarter. We are making sure that the health of the business, the fundamentals are strong, and that's why we are explaining the second level of details behind the numbers alone.
I completely understand. Why I ask this question is primarily because, when we look at the, order bookings that we have been getting over the last, four quarters, barring, Q2 last year, and even if we adjust that for the anomaly because of lockdowns or some delays in this quarter, we are almost closer to that 190-200 crore run rate that we are clocking.
Yeah.
So ideally, that should actually provide the base for the run rate on a quarterly basis to move up steadily towards that benchmark of 200 per quarter. So that's what I'm just trying to understand.
No, absolutely.
There are some anomalies of some timeline, duration increase of orders, but still,
how should one look at this? So that's what I was.
No, I guess you've triangulated all the things correctly. So our order inflow is clocking at the level that you mentioned, barring a small hiccup here and there in terms of quarterly stuff. Our target is to get to that kind of 100 sooner than later. You know, we want it soonest, but of course we'll have to continue to make sure that we keep executing and keep our heads down. And we also believe that we need to get to that number because our expense structure, our basic size of the company at least requires a certain minimum amount of revenue. We are getting there almost, I would say. And the more important part is the quality of revenues more than just the numbers. Which is why the run rate business and the diversification between India and international makes sense. So overall, all I can say is, yeah, exactly what you're saying is what we want to do, and we want to do it sooner than later. And hopefully, we will come again in a few quarters and then, share what we have achieved.
Yep. All the best. And we also, shareholders, look forward to that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, due to time constraints, that was the last question for today. I now hand the conference over to the management for closing comments.
No, thank you, everybody. I think we had a fairly engaging set of questions, and we hope we answered all the questions to the best that we could. And as I summarized just a minute back, I think we believe that we are on track, and things are moving in the right direction. And we continue to look forward to the remaining quarters of the year and build a very good foundation for business for solid growth over the years. So thank you very much and appreciate your patience and confidence in all of us. Thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of ICICI Securities Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.